all the time, everywhere. Everything starts beating and squirting and talking to each other the ways I can't understand. Most of the time, they probably be saying, I'm hungry, I gotta poop. But sometimes they be talking in codes.
Welcome to episode 3. This is Movies, Cigars, and a Brew with Keith and Andrew. I'm Keith.
I'm Andrew.
And what are we going to be talking about today, Andrew?
The movie of the week is Beasts of the Southern Wild, 2012, directed by Ben Zeitlin, starring Quvenzhané Wallace and Dwight Henry. Quick synopsis is Hush Puppy, a 6-year-old living in the neighborhood of Bathtub with her father on a southern delta. She envisions great beasts.
What are we smoking today?
The cigar that we're smoking this week is the H. Upman Sungrown in Magnum, 6x54. The country is Honduras. The wrapper is Ecuadorian Sungrown. Binder is Connecticut Broadleaf. And the filler is Honduran and Nicaraguan tobaccos. And full disclosure, we had this about back in June.
Yeah, we had it on the golf course. It was
on the golf course, right?
It was great at that point, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was one of my favorite cigars this past summer. But we'll get into it later when we do this. How's the cigar going? But it was a pepper bomb last summer, and it's mellowed in my humidor for about 7 months, and it's still pretty tasty.
I agree with you. This week, this is not going to be something you can go out there and find. One of the things I've liked over the years is home brews, and probably at some point we'll feature a home brew that I even get Andrew to help me produce. But this one actually was not produced by myself. It was produced by a friend, and I'll call this this hails from Schiffmacher Estates, and this is a bourbon barrel porter.
I want a tour.
Yeah, that's right. That's
free samples.
So this has a few grains in it. So it's got some English chocolate malt, some English dark crystal, and some English black malt. It's got the fermentables. There's 2 pounds of wheat malt dried and 6.3 pounds of dark malt. The hops and flavoring is Chinook, 1 ounce of that, and 2 half ounces of U.S. Goldings. And then the specialty ingredient is some Jack Daniels that was added in at the secondary fermenting stage. And, you know, we poured it out here in the glass, and we'll have a picture up online. But it's a real deep. It's a nice beer. It had a good head on it. It was very smooth. You know, so far, I think this is grade A. And, unfortunately, I only have one bottle of it. I would definitely take a couple more of those.
You know, I think you should go buy a six-pack.
Yeah, that's right. We'll go over there, so... all right, so let's get into talking about the movie.
Yeah, you want to start off with the first point?
Yeah, you know, I think we chose this movie because, well, for one thing, it was the only one that was out there that we could look at without going to the theater this week to see.
From the Oscar list.
Right, yeah, that's on the Oscar list. And, you know, so I you know, this would have not been a movie based upon reading it that I would have gone out and seen myself.
Right.
Certainly not in a theater. It might have been a Netflixer, you know, or something for me.
But not even then, maybe.
Maybe not even that. Right. You know, I probably wouldn't, you know, probably wouldn't even watch it then. But, so, that being said, when we decided to do this, we decided we were going to expand our horizons, and or at least I
think it was your horizons.
Yeah, my horizons. Yeah, right. And, you know, so when I go into it, I'm like, okay, why did they choose this movie? Let's look at this from that perspective and see, you know, do I give in to all the hype that surrounded this particular movie?
Okay.
And, you know, I'll say it's visually, I think it's pretty sharp. I like the way there's some I think it was a beautifully shot movie. I think there's a lot of intense images that mm-hmm. that give you a reaction based upon just seeing them.
Right.
and very colorful characters. I thought the little girl, she was only five. I'm going to call her Hush Puppy from now on because I can't pronounce her first name. I thought she was adorable. I thought she was great, you know, in what she was doing. I would have preferred if she'd worn pants more in the movie. But other than that, I thought she did a great job. I mean, you know, those are probably my good points about the movie.
Okay.
But we'll go into the, some other points. You have a point you want to bring up?
I guess the pants thing sort of leads magically into my first point.
we didn't know.
What a horrible living condition from a view of living in, I don't even want to call them shanties, because some of them seem to have a foundation and a structure, but
yeah.
For the most part, inside or out, regardless of how they were built, it was just horrendous.
Right.
Like one of the opening scenes, she's playing with, I think it's a chick.
Right.
Inside her house on a mud mound inside her house.
Right.
Which seems, you know, a little dirty by
anybody's standard.
By anybody's standard. Yeah. One of the things that, you know, I like to contrast is does poverty necessarily mean messy? And I can say it doesn't always mean messy, but.
Well, I have. That's probably that leads into a point later for me. I'm going to save that point for last.
But you understand what I'm saying? There's these stereotypes of poverty, and this one seemed to want to hit every single one.
Right.
Southern poverty or the Delta poverty.
Yeah.
The pants thing is a sign of poverty, in my opinion. Not that you can't necessarily afford pants. It's also a hotter climate, but the idea of kids just run wild without wearing pants.
Yeah, but you know, you see that a lot.
I don't see that.
Almost a parent type thing.
Yeah,
but do you see
that in like rich neighborhoods in Connecticut? No.
Well, no. Okay.
Right, that's the reason I equate the two. I'm not judging.
I've been into a lot of rich neighborhoods.
I guess one of my first points is I don't want to judge this from a social economic perspective because on one hand it's very stereotypical. Like that was one of my points. Was we all grew up somewhere. We all have a background, whether it's ethnic or not. But my biggest thing, in movies at least, and just regular life, one of the things that makes us different is that what are your values? How were you taught how to be something? And I'm not talking the big values, just, right? There's another movie that came out, I'm not sure when, but it's called Winter's Bone with Jennifer Lawrence. This is before she became the Hunger Games popular actress. I thought, again, this was one of those Oscar-nominated movies, but it dealt with poverty from the Ozarks perspective.
Right.
And it's always interesting that, on one hand, America and capitalism always means we're trying to be socially upward mobile. We want a better life for our kids, what I hear all the time, especially in campaign years.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody says that's our goal, but then when you actually look at what they're doing from a day-to-day perspective, are they? Right? Because the offset is, I am so proud of my heritage. Again, I'm not judging, but they're so poor, and that's all they know. I don't think they know how to better themselves. Not because they don't want to. Right? You could say it's ignorance, or I'm defending my culture. And I'll say that just because when they had the mandatory evacuation, or when they wanted to go back home, you know, I understand the motive. Like, I want to go home, but really?
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing, what you're saying ties into both of my next two points.
Okay.
And I can't help but, you know, say, all right, well, I have to kind of talk about it a little bit. I mean, honestly, is that, and this was really my big thing, this story is very preachy.
There's a message.
Yeah,
there's a social message.
There's all these socially, that's the part that I have that I have start to have a problem with it, because where this movie fails for me,
right.
When you look at another movie, Where the Wild Things Are.
Okay.
I like that movie, and that movie was really kind of harsh and ragged because you vary the kid's reality in life to where he rides the boat over to this fantasy island where you knew that all this stuff that was really happening here was not real.
Right.
And they blurred all that in this movie, and they made the world not a sort of fantasy.
So,
I mean, you know, I find it hard to believe, and I don't even think that they meant this to be in Louisiana. I find it hard to believe that you could have that, like, you know, say in the United States. Maybe we do. I mean, I don't know. But, right. you know, somebody living south of the levee, kids living in that type of squalor where right. social services doesn't come running in and take the kids out of there or something, you know.
Right.
But so to me, the movie was all very preachy from the standpoint of telling us, I guess here's the real thing. This is my real point. The story glorifies the mud poor have-nots.
Right,
and tries to assert that there is something noble.
Right.
Let me tell you something.
The simple life.
Yeah, let me tell you something. I've lived both lives.
Right.
And even if you believed it yourself and you believed in the simple life,
right.
the fact is where you generally live, there will be people that didn't get there by choice and would screw it up for the rest of you.
Okay.
It wouldn't be this beautiful utopia where, you know, they were very careful about not making this a racial movie because they had the blacks and whites
right,
and all kind of like
the
in
white
this symbiotic
kids, right.
sort of bathtub. Right. We're all together.
We're all
that's
the
not the reality
water.
Of the world. That's not right. – I mean, that. So they created a world. And then the woman standing there, like one of my things is like, wait a minute. Does that woman actually have cave drawings on her leg that she's teaching kids?
Yeah,
with?
We all have tattoos of cave drawings on our leg.
I mean, I was like...
That's how I was taught to history.
So these are all the things that... Okay, so...
Let's back up for a second. I want to agree with you on a couple of things. I think the movie had a hard time, and this is what I was trying to say before, right? People have this strong emotional connection to where they're from, their origins, their
right.
upbringing, even if it was bad.
Right.
And when I say bad, it sounds judgmental. But right, I think they did that in the movie. Right? On one hand, they showed you the squalor. They didn't hide it, right? You saw junk everywhere. The houses didn't have roofs. The inside of the houses were a complete mess. The guy threw salmonella chicken on the barbecue every night because it wasn't in a refrigerator.
Yeah.
So I don't think they hid the poverty. And then yet, the fireworks party, the good life of watching animals, to be able to play, right? Isn't that the other contrast we say is our kids, all they do is play Xbox. Right. Well, these kids were out running outside in the wild, and that's what suburban parents want. Maybe not the wild.
They don't really
but
want
they want him out to play.
When my son's out of the house, I'm terrified about what he's going to do to
right.
himself. You know?
Right, but if you had an option where you just had like woods, and you just said, go out and play, that's the American suburban ideal. Get away from the Game Boy. Get away from the Xbox. Stop tweeting and texting. Go play. That's a generational cry of every middle-aged man that I know who's got kids.
I can tell you the thing that I know about the whole playing thing was playing never stopped until somebody got hurt.
Or the sun went down and you got called for dinner.
Yeah, I mean, but usually
right? but
somebody
generation.
Was going to end up getting hurt at
right.
some point.
But again, this is not a generational debate. But what I'm saying is they tried to show you both sides. At least they were trying to show you the contrast. And maybe that was the whole point. It's a catch-22. You always romanticize your childhood,
yeah.
even the bad parts, if you have enough time away from it.
Well, what am I supposed to think about the girl sitting there cooking some cat food for herself?
Well, poor people eat cat food. Judging.
But the whole context of the movie was this was a great way to live. Look how
no,
great,
that's not how I.
No,
that's not how
look
I
how
it.
Great spiritually she no. is because she's living in this squalor.
No, I think it was just to show you squalor so that you emotionally connect with the girl. Like, oh my God, this poor girl. Why is she eating cat food? Again, poverty movies, for lack of a better category, are supposed to make you bond with the person. None
yeah.
of us want to eat cat food.
Right.
But in reality, some people do. And I'm not, again, without judgment, without making fun of these people, you understand, like, right off the bat, you sympathize with this young girl. You hope she's okay. You know, and you also realize she's also immature. She burned down her own house. Again, to be fair, if you're listening, there were several houses half finished. I would have preferred one house finished.
Yeah.
But the father yells, go back to your house, which was like, what, 10 feet away, and another shanty type building. But she burned it down on purpose to get back at her dad for ignoring her.
Yeah.
So you know she's still a kid who's irrational.
Yeah, I think that for me, the whole context where it broke down is, like I said, The blurring of what was real and
so
what
let's talk
wasn't
about
real.
That for a second. You're suggesting that now I watched other movies from a kid's fantasy viewpoint. I think you mentioned Where the Wild Things Are.
Yeah.
There's some Japanese anime. At least the ones that I've seen, it's pretty clear cut that A, they're in the fantasy world in total.
Yeah.
Or you know the scenes that are sort of cutting back, right? This one was like most of it's real, in my opinion, most of it's real. The hurricane hit, the poverty, the day-to-day
yeah.
stuff. And then she fantasized about the beasts running. or whatever the beasts were doing at the
time. My problem was is I believed that the world that they created was a fantasy world.
So the whole thing, even the bad, the poor, the ugly.
Well, because it's just not
believable. But why would a kid fantasize about that?
No. I'm just saying, I'm not talking about, what I'm talking about was they didn't create a world. The bathtub was not a believable world. Okay? That's the part I have a problem with. It was for the reasons we said.
Right.
That type of abject squalor, usually there's a lot of bad elements also in it. They didn't depict any of those bad elements
Alcoholism, everybody was drunk all the time. They had to evacuate.
What's wrong with that? Wait. Are you trying to tell me something?
Yeah. They had the guy had a half a pickup truck as a boat.
Right. That was the boat. The boat.
I can guarantee there's no law in that place.
But right. they didn't depict drugs and
alcoholism existed.
Yeah, but they didn't really.
But again, remember, they're so isolated. Right? A bad neighborhood on land is bigger.
Yeah,
and you can have other things. You know, there's more people. What was the per capita of this place? Like 0 point something.
I just didn't believe that these kids were going to school.
They weren't.
No, they were. That's what that woman was. But they created a world where she is the one that's teaching them the rules of life. They created this. My problem.
Yeah, but you don't think that happens utopia. if you're isolated. No. Again, you're using the word utopia. I completely disagree.
They depicted it as a utopia.
You thought that was a great education.
No, I didn't.
So how do you use utopia?
Because that's what they want you to say. These people had nothing, but they had they had the connection to the land.
Yeah, no.
And it was the evilness.
In terms of food, yes, right? They ate crawfish. They ate shrimp. They ate that one scene where they're trying to catch catfish with their hands. Perspective.
Yeah.
If you're dirt poor, they were lucky in the sense that they can have seafood. Right. Again, I'm not saying you eat seafood every day. You don't get bored of it. But the one thing I really loved, and we talked about this off topic, was when she says animals are food, and the more wealthier you get, animals are human beings.
Well, I'll give you that one. That's pretty deep.
So again, yeah. I don't think they were romanticizing everything, because you and I could intellectually pick out all the problems. Right? There were bad things. You wanted more bad things. You wanted a crack whore. You wanted heroin dealers. I'll go with you. But they were so isolated. But they definitely had alcoholism. Well, almost every adult, with the exception of the lady, was an alcoholic. The two older white couple,
yeah,
like they wake up the next day from the hurricane and they're both drunk.
I know, right?
Again, I'm not. Yeah, it's one of those things where you're like, I don't want to judge, because, you know, it's politically incorrect, right? But I think I thought they did a pretty good job of showing you the bad, and then they showed you a little bit of the romanticism, because again, we all romanticize where we come from.
Yeah.
Even if it was horrible.
It still is that same preachy tone to me that the wisdom of those that are connected to the land versus the horrible nature of technology and civilization.
But there's nothing wrong with eating food closest to the source. What other examples of the land thing would they talk about?
But you're missing my point of what the message of the story was. My problem is it's the same story in the sense of, you know, civilization bad, connecting to the land good.
Yeah, I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with that message. It depends on what extreme you want to go. You go Christian Scientist, no medicine, my kid's going to die, it's okay,
God's
will. That's
kind of what he did.
What he did was just pure neglect. He was an alcoholic.
But he believed it was evil.
Believed the packaged food they were given was evil when they're in the
shelter. Believed that medicine was evil. He ran from the hospital.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, he, right. I mean, you know,
and he paid a price for it.
Yeah, he paid the price of death. At least they showed that. Yeah. Was that, you know, this was what he got for it.
But it also sort
of symbolized that he'd rather die than be a part of civilization.
My interpretation was he was a coward, right? Again, maybe.
No, I think he honestly believed that it was evil. He believed that all civilization was evil.
Well, here's the rub.
He said, how ugly are they? Look, we're in the most beautiful place in the world.
Well, again, to them they were. But here's the one thing, I'll contrast what you just said. There was a scene where the little girl came across, I think, a bloated cow or a lamb, and its guts were all torn out, and she didn't stick her head in it, but she bends down to look inside her. The intestines are out, right? So civilization sterilizes everything, right? My meat comes in a package. I don't have to slaughter the cow.
Right? Yeah.
But yeah. The one thing, at least they know and then they're fully aware, because how many times did the father and the daughter talk about death?
Yeah.
Right? In our civilized antiseptic world, death is so horrible that we will do everything we can to prevent it, even when quality of life is at issue.
Yeah, I know. I got you. Yeah.
These people weren't afraid of dying. He was upset that she wasn't older and had more life skills, right? But I thought he was a coward in the sense that if you really cared about your daughter, maybe you would take the bad medicines, as you would call it, to stick around to help her. I think he was like, no, it's just a cycle of life. I'm meant to die at this time. Right. Screw it. I tried to teach her. But I don't just think there's necessarily anything wrong with saying that civilization bad earthliness, because they're doing that in food, right? People trying to be more, they call it snout-to-tail cooking, where you don't waste as much as you can, which means you eat some of the nastier bits, and traditionally the poor people did, right?
Yeah, those are called delicacies now.
Yeah, I didn't find this movie as preachy as you did. And I'm okay with that.
I did. I think that was my big issue with it, was the preachy nature of it. Seemed, you know, a lot of those same subtexts were there,
right?
That they were.
But I think one of the major things that correlates to what you're saying is when you say preachy, I also think they're taking pride in their existence because they have no choice. Nobody wants to say I live a crappy life, right? Everybody wants to say there's something.
Preachy's not from the standpoint of the characters in the story. I thought all the people acted very well. I'm talking about the construct of the story. I'm talking about what messages they're trying to deliver. I mean, you know, the preachy nature comes from what story am I trying to tell? Right. And you know, it's the same thing. Technology, advancements in science, everything that goes along those lines is bad. Intelligence is bad. Is what they're telling you. It's better to be dumb and poor and be connected to the land than being smart and intelligent and living longer.
But flip
you know
it.
What I mean?
But poor people are ignorant. Right? You took it as a direct message to you, but I'm saying poor people are ignorant to the point where I know people, you know, in real life who don't believe all of medicine.
Yeah, I know, but
So, you know. So are we saying the characters are okay for the way they actually behaved in the movie?
Yeah, yeah. But I have more of a problem. I don't have any problem
with it. But you're getting some sort of tonal.
I just don't like the message of the story. I think that's where I'm coming. So I'm not judging it. I'm not judging about what they did in the story. What they did in the story was the context of the story. I'm judging the story. And that's where.
But I think you're judging the motivation of the characters' behaviors. You're not judging the story is that they're poor. They're going to make bad decisions. That's what they did.
Yeah, I think they took it was a very well crafted story to get to where they want. Right. And at the end of the day, you kind of go, well, what did I just see? You know, at the end of the day, the opening sequence that we put in is about as much as you're going to know even by the end.
Well, let's talk about the title, right? Since it mentions the beasts of the
what's the beasts? Well, who's the beasts?
Well,
I've read different things about that.
Here's my interpretation, because all right, let's say that the movie was preachy, right? That technology and modern science is bad, and getting back to the core of the earth is good, right? I think the beasts were supposed to represent the offset of balance. Right? She does say balance a couple of times. When the universe breaks, I got to fix it. She's only a little piece of the universe, right? I do believe the beasts represent a balance with nature, a balance with science, right? I read something.
What did her big standoff at the end of it mean? I don't know what that means.
That she was brave enough to say they're not going to, you know, like, what did her father
not
say?
Not going to what? The outcome of the story is the land is dead, her father's dead. Right. What's she going
to
do?
That she's ready to face what's next because she's a tough, fierce little girl.
Yeah.
Well. Right? I mean, that's what the father kept instilling. You're the man. You're the boss. He kept calling her boss lady.
Yeah,
right.
But there's still an element that there's a reality there that it just sort of defies reality.
It's not supposed to be reality. It's a movie.
Well, but they're blending fantastic with reality. Right. You know, so to me it was like they were trying to be real and show a real element that was believable and blend in all of her, you know, fantastic stuff in the midst of it. You know,
which is okay because other movies do that. I think you got caught up on the whole preachiness and then you decided to sort of hate the movie. I will say, when she does that standoff with the beasts, she is saying, I am ready to take on the world. And then afterwards, she feeds her father the gator as a goodbye meal, and he lets her and she stays around to watch him die. Basically, he told her to go run away. Don't watch me die. Remember the bus scene when he's like, you're trying to leave me, and she's like, no, I'm letting you so you don't see me die, right? So it was almost like she's saying, at the age of six, I can face the world. And you and I, this is where you go into reality and say, no, you can't. You're an orphan. You live in a crappy, right? Our reality sneaking into the movie. All she's saying is, I've handled all you can throw at me. I'm still standing,
right?
I don't know. 10 years later, maybe she goes to Harvard. 10 years later, maybe she's dead in the street somewhere. We don't know.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, it was an interesting story. It was one that I thought it was well done. The people that played in it. Well, it had a lot of interesting parts to it.
Right. Most of the cast is New Orleans natives. The father owns a bakery, and he's not an actor, and he put up a poster for a casting call, and the director said, "I want you to play this part."
He was great. I thought he was great. I had no problem with the way people acted in the movie. There was no poor acting. I thought the little girl was great. I mean,
I thought she was
minimalistic.
Amazing.
The minimalistic nature of what she did in the movie,
right.
It was just awesome. Yeah, right. And listening to her talk, like her little segments,
her little monologues were great.
Her little monologues were very poignant, right. and you know, she had some great, you know, sort of messages in that. I think the overall story falls a little short for me. They were trying to draw up a little bit of the where the wild things are type of thing with her, you know, fantasy type stuff. But in the end, I thought it was good. But I would not have gone to see this in a theater even after seeing it.
No, that's fair. I think like I said, the fantasy reality pieces didn't seem all that confused. Right. Anytime there was a beast, it was her mind.
Well, be honest with you, when she jumped in the water and swam out to a boat that I guess she thought was her mother.
Well, she just swam and the boat showed up. So
no,
yeah.
She saw the light. That's why she jumped in the water. So that whole sequence where they went to Elysian Fields,
right.
I mean, that's all like sort of weird. It was like, you know, again, like a whorehouse and a food shack.
So if this was really...
And then you couldn't figure out if that woman was her mom or not.
Right,
she danced around with her mom or, you know, in her mind. And then she decided she had to go home and she took the gator meat back to her dad.
So this is... I thought that was great. Was on one hand, you know, you're sitting there like, really? A brothel? So how could this be fantasy? Right, if this was fantasy in terms of traditional fantasy, it would be a castle in the sky. Or something good, right? I will say it is odd that a whole bunch of little girls are just swimming, you know, endlessly.
The guy was creepy that was in that.
Well, that was pretty cool. It was a high platform boat. I don't know. So it's something to do with the oil rigs.
Yeah, I guess it's, I don't really even know what it was.
Now,
I was confused by that. I'm like, that guy looks like a pedophile. Like, you know, and so he takes him out to...
Listen, hobbies to yourself.
No, so he takes him out to what? Oh, let me take these girls out to this, cat house I know. Right. And this is a good spot for
them. He knew it was a slow night, so all the women would pay. The only poignant thing about...
They're dancing around with the little girls.
Well, that was my point.
It was really weird.
The poignant piece was that up until then, you never saw anybody get hugged. How many times do you hug your kids? A ton. You never saw any affection. You never saw any love. The father told the girl to live in a separate building altogether. This was the first time these girls got... luckily, to your point, they're not pedophiles. They were women. So they gave them motherly love. They just hugged them and danced. And it was just like... So maybe it was a fantasy, maybe it wasn't. But the reality for me was that it contrasted like, hey, this is a whorehouse.
Yeah.
But yet they found true love. Well, that's better than me because I don't usually find true love in... Oh, wait, never mind. I thought the movie was pretty good. I enjoyed the movie vastly. I enjoyed the contrast of what they're trying to say. I didn't get the preachiness as much as you did. It was there, but I don't think... I think in our modern society, we live in that contradiction, right? Packaged food is bad for us, but we're not all going to go have 40 acres and a cow, right? Processed sugar is bad for us, but we have to make more of a choice now to try to eat healthier.
Yeah.
Right? We don't want steroids in our home or antibiotics in our meat. But then, you know, what control do we really have? I don't know. I'm saying as a foodie wannabe or an ex-foodie, that all the stuff has been addressed. in more drastic ways than this movie did. And there's some goodness and some truth to it, right?
I didn't think it was a bad movie. I mean,
no,
you know, don't
I
get me wrong.
I thoroughly enjoyed the movie. I'm not sure if it's Oscar worthy. We'll come back to that.
Yeah.
I just want to hit a few other, I guess,
yeah,
quick
go ahead.
Points.
Go ahead.
What I was wanting to say was the first day of shooting was when the pipeline in the Gulf broke.
Is that right?
Right. So they had to dodge crews that were cleaning up the oil spill. Right, they couldn't have them in the camera shots. They couldn't be in the same place. So they had to reshoot a couple of things away from where they originally intended to shoot from.
Huh.
So I thought that was fascinating. Again, I said half the cast or more than all the speaking parts practically had somebody from New Orleans locally, and they're not actors. And I thought that was cool. Whether they did a good job or not, I thought it was pretty authentic. I think you and I said this real quick. I don't think it necessarily says New Orleans anywhere, but they show you a picture of the levees, so I think it's assumed it was New Orleans.
Yeah, there was a post-Katrina aspect to it. I mean, there was also the visual, you know, so there was also the visual of the ices melting.
Well, yeah.
That was kind of like a sort of preachy message of
the world's global warming.
Chlorofluorocarbons.
Wow, you read a lot into this preachy thing. I just thought,
well,
how else are you going to get beasts? Oh, they were frozen.
But there was a message there. We're melting the polar caps.
Yeah, but don't you believe in global warming?
Yeah, but I the correlation was these are all bad things. And
yeah, but
this is the evil of the
get unfrozen from their slumber.
There was a double meaning there.
No, I'm just
saying. I'll agree with you.
If we all believe in global warming, because the truly smart people do, again, I'm not saying I believe or disbelieve, but it worked functionality. Right? Other movies where they dig up a woolly mammoth that was frozen. It's their way of doing it.
You get my point. That to me was, you know, here's the evil.
But if you believe in global warming, why would you think it's preachy? That's what I don't understand.
There was no necessary connection between having to have that there and having a hurricane.
No, but there was a functionality of having the, again, fantasy. The beasts are all fantasy, but they have to come out of the ice slumber somehow.
To me, the tie-in was we screwed up the world, which has led to these types of things that causes these big disasters.
Yes. That's what she says. She said, the universe is broken.
Yeah.
I could try to fix my little piece.
Right.
I don't find that offensive at all.
No, I know. To me, it was just, you know, it was very Al Gore-ish. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I'm going to give him credit. He invented the internet and this movie.
No, I'm just saying. I just felt
that's
that
fine.
Way to me. It felt way to
that's
me.
That's fine. I didn't get the same thing you got, but we can.
We can agree to disagree on that particular element.
We could agree that you're wrong, but. You know,
okay, whatever you want to say.
You got any other quick notes on
that? No, I think we've covered most of my quick notes. So we should probably take a quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about what we're going to talk about next. We're going to talk about.
I think we're going to talk about the Oscars.
Yeah, talk a little bit about the Oscars and talk a little bit about the movies of 2012. Just a quick thing, but we'll be back in just a minute. We're back. So in this next section, we're going to start off talking about our ratings for the things that we've discussed today. Because I think we already said that based upon the way that we nitpick things, you may not walk away with an impression of whether or not we like something.
Exactly.
So I think first off, we had a discussion about, you know, what should the rating system be. And I think we've decided that it's going to be out of 5
right.
for anything. And we can use half or quarter point differentials there.
I'm going out to the fifth decimal.
Yeah. We can get as nerdy as we want. Multiply by pi at some point.
Nice.
First off, we're going to talk about the movie. And I guess the movie for me, I'm going to rate it a 3 out of 5.
Okay.
I thought it was enjoyable. You know, I was there for the ride. I'm glad I kind of stepped outside my bounds and I saw something that was Oscar-related. You know, I don't think it hit all the points it wanted to. I know it was nominated for a few things, but for me, I think it's a 3 out of 5. What do you think?
Right. I would say it's probably 3.5.
3.5?
3.5.
Out of 5?
Out of 5. I enjoyed it. I mean, all I'll say is that for whatever length of time, an hour, hour and a half. I don't even know how long it was. I enjoyed what I was watching. I was engrossed. The little girl, I think, she's the main character, obviously, but, you know, she's got some chops.
So what goes into your rating system? Because I think we discussed this, too, because this is a key element. What is 3.5? You know, what factors in for you? I told you one thing for me is would I like to see it again. Now, I know that doesn't hold true.
That's a fair critique or element of your scale. That's a good one. I think we all watch movies over and over again. I know when I have HBO right now, and if there's a movie that I've seen, I'll turn it on for half an hour. Doesn't mean, right? So rewatchability is a good criteria for you, if that's what your rating's on. You're saying it's a 3 because you probably won't rewatch it.
I probably have seen enough of it that I wouldn't go back.
If it was on HBO, would you watch like half an hour?
Probably not.
Right. So that's a fair rating.
It wasn't engaging enough for me.
Right. For me, I guess first time through, I always try to watch a movie as entertainment. Am I entertained?
Yeah.
Am I sort of like, you know, when we were kids, and we'll date ourselves, but when we first saw Star Wars in the theater, we were, you know.
That was right up my alley. It was right up your alley.
No, I know, but it was a wow experience for our age, our perspective, our time. But it was something on a grand scale, if you will. You know, I look at it. Did I enjoy this movie? Yeah. There's some problems to it. I agree with you. There were some problems to it.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was Oscar worthy. We'll get to that in a second. But I'd give it a 3.5. If it was on again on HBO, would I watch? Maybe a couple of sections, but I'm not going out of my way. I do want to see what all three, the director, the actor, the father, and the daughter are going to do in the future.
I actually think the writers of this were pretty good.
Okay.
And I think this is his first foray into this. I'm not sure.
Well, the director, I think, helped write the screenplay.
Yeah, but I thought
with the writer of the.
So I think he's got a pretty bright future. I mean, this was pretty.
I'm just curious.
I like the interesting aspect that they did something different, and I like that. I've always, you know, you and I have always talked about. I have a problem when it's just, you can tell they didn't get the right person for the part, and they just get an actor who's got a big name.
Right.
That bothers me a little bit,
or
kind of diminishes a movie out of the gate. Right. They didn't do that here. I didn't know any of these people. Right. I thought they all did great.
Yeah,
I thought they were wonderful.
The father is not an actor. He's a bakery owner.
Right.
In New Orleans, and he was putting up flyers for the open casting call.
Right.
And somebody spotted him, and they wanted him. Right. The girl is an actress, I guess, because her mom, takes her to casting calls. So she snuck in because you're supposed to be 6, and she was only 5.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So
she was great. She was wonderful.
I thought she had a pretty good range for a kid.
She played like a 6-year-old to me.
Yeah. I thought she was.
You finally got that, huh?
Not a 5-year-old. Yeah. And this is the director's first full-length feature. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think for them, it's a promising start. I'd like to see what happens.
Yeah.
I don't have any investment.
They're going to get some cred off of this, that's for sure. They might actually get a budget next time, see what they do.
Yeah, I think they said they only made this with like 1.3 or 1.6 million.
You know?
Which is amazing in today's day and age.
Everybody has a Goodwill Hunting. Let's see what they can do next. You know what I'm saying? Let's see what they got next.
I guess it was a 3.5. You know what I forgot to do? Did I do my weekly punch in the face? Or
oh, wait. Who gets that this week?
I don't know. Maybe the lady with the cave drawings on her thigh.
Okay. Well, you know what? I'll give her a punch in the face, too, for that one. That one didn't do it for me either.
So I think we both enjoyed it once. It's probably not something we would watch again.
I'm glad we watched it.
Yeah, though. I'm glad we watched it.
Because I think it sparked a lot of talk, even though I think we had her first.
You definitely can't be right.
Right. So now the cigar. I mean, this is sort of fish in a barrel again, because we knew. I think the interesting aspect for us on the cigar
was the age.
Was the fact that we've had it before. We loved it the first time, and probably the first time it was on the golf course. So it's not always the best conditions when you're on a golf course.
Right.
And but it was peppery then. Definitely much more subdued now, but it's still an enjoyable smoke.
Yeah, it was funny. I think when I was on a golf course, I gave one to one of our golf buddies, and he's like, "Whoa, this is a real cigar." And I don't know what he meant exactly, because I think he was smoking some, you know, cheaper stuff. I will say it's extremely well constructed. The pepper bomb that we had back in June has died down a lot.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. It was almost borderline painful. Almost.
It
was so overpowering and dominating.
I thought it was great, though. And I'm not the... I don't like the big in-the-face, like, you know, burning
pepper
stuff. But it was good.
But these have melted.
So what do you rate it? What are you going to rate it as?
I'm going to give it, like, probably a 3.75.
All right.
Because I don't think there's any wow here, but it's really consistent and it's good.
So. This one, I think my baseline for a cigar that I would do, I would rebuy all the time would be at least a 4. So this is a 4 for me.
Okay.
It was consistent the first time we got it. The second time we got it, we had it a couple times now, but this is definitely mellow now. But I like the mellow.
Yeah.
It's not mellow and bland. It's still got some flavor. It's just
I would definitely
subdued.
Smoke these again.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're talking about replayability.
Right, exactly.
I would
back
definitely
to that.
Smoke these again.
Now, we have no replayability with the beer.
Oh, yeah.
But I gotta say, I was thoroughly surprised about how good it came out and to think that it was a homebrew.
Right.
You know, I'm going to give that a 4 as well for myself because I thought it tasted great. There was no... you know, when you do homebrew, sometimes you can get your process is not as controlled.
Right.
And sometimes you can get a little bit of unusual flavors, which is, you know, it can happen, you know, because it's not a professional setup.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've had several homebrew varieties from this fellow that made this, and they've all come out very well, in my opinion. This was probably one of the best ones, and I'm kind of interested with the process, and I want to kind of potentially duplicate some of that process at some point because I thought that was great. I'd be thrilled if that was something that I made. And I made some stouts before, which is similar, but I like the fact that he used some bourbon in it.
The Jack Daniels.
Yeah, the Jack Daniels. So.
Yeah.
What'd you rate it as?
Well, I think in general, I'm not a big beer guy, but. I think when it comes to the stouts, the heavier, creamier, darker stuff, I'm not sure I can drink a six pack of these. But for a single serving, I really like this one. I thought it had a nice blend of flavors. Again, I don't have the biggest palate,
right.
But everything I tasted, I really liked. There's a creaminess, there's a subtle sweetness, but mostly the creaminess and some chocolatey stuff comes through.
Yeah,
and again, I didn't taste anything bad.
Yeah,
right.
And home brews, that's one of the things you got to be wary of is like the odd flavor that gets into your process that doesn't taste right. That's what hops covers up a lot of times.
Okay.
It's a bittering agent that kind of
masks
some other flavor.
I would probably give it a 4, not only because my limited history with beers in general, but I would say
that's a fair assessment. Because
We break into his house and take the rest of it.
Exactly. I'm,
right, so that's worth.
I know where he lives. It's fine. We'll hit it up. Excellent. So, in the next section, we're going to go and talk about the week behind, the week ahead,
right? Or the week past.
The week past.
Because I know you got a thing about behinds.
Yeah. So, one of the things that I posted on our Facebook page and I tweeted and stuff was about a list I saw that came out this past week for the 10 most overrated movies of 2012.
Nice.
Actually came out a few weeks ago. It came out on December 20th, and this is by a guy named David Ehrlich. So I got to give him, you know, credit for this because this was his list. I don't know how extensive it was, but I thought it was interesting to look at what he put on this list. Number 10 coming in the list. We'll just go through the list real quick and talk about what we want to. Number 10 on this list was Hunger Games. I saw Hunger Games.
I did too.
It was a kid, sort of a kid thing.
Well, there was a lot of hype, so maybe he's factoring hype, right? There was a lot of hype before.
Yeah, I think that's part of it.
But I enjoyed the movie, so I'm not gonna. I understand, but
yeah, I mean, I didn't. I, you know,
I enjoyed it, so I'm not gonna. You know,
the next one is the one we talked about the first week is Looper, and one of his big things. Was he liked it all the way through and stuff, and then this happened. And if you see the picture, it's the picture of the little boy with his teeth at the bottom. it looks real nasty. And the other thing they said was the first like part of the movie was great, and then all of a sudden it turned into a cornfield, and all the stuff surrounding this cornfield, like everything was cool, and all of a sudden the second half of the movie was all about a farm.
Right.
You know, and I thought that was an interesting...
Again, that's your point about how you hate nature. And...
No, it's not no, even I'm that, just but kidding. I'm just saying that...
The pacing was off.
Well, all of a sudden, it got to this part. It was really fast-paced, all this stuff, you know, futuristic, and all of a sudden, they're sitting around a farm.
There's a child of the corn instead of children of the corn.
Yeah, basically, right?
So
that was a kind of an interesting take. I don't know if I necessarily agree.
Right.
Because one of my things was I didn't hype it at all. I didn't know anything about it.
Well, I guess
I don't know what hype means.
I'm trying to figure out what he means by most hyped, I guess part of it. Is it most hyped or overrated?
Overrated.
Overrated. So,
overrated.
So I know the sci-fi geekdom loved this movie before. So there was your sci-fi hype, and maybe that's
I
why.
Guess.
I don't know. All right, what was next?
Next is Wreck-It Ralph. I can't talk about it. I'd like to see this one. This was on the list to see.
Yeah.
Part of the reason is it's just nostalgia.
Video game nostalgia.
Yeah, I want to see all these old video game characters I played. So I don't know. I haven't even, you know, I can't comment.
I'd like to see it, though.
I want to see it, too. This one, I never heard of this one. The Perks of Being a Wallflower. No clue.
I want to say it's like a teenage artsy thing.
Yeah.
Maybe not the artsy. You're going to have to bear with me. When I say artsy, it could mean independent. But there's something about there was hype to that movie.
So I'm looking at the picture they threw up, and maybe that was an unflattering picture.
It's a teenage movie, so I'm not sure how much you and I would get out of this.
Yeah, I think it'd be tough. That'd be a tough go for me. So I can't even. I don't even know if I'd ever.
There's somebody big in it, name wise. I don't know who it was. But,
yeah, I'm not sure.
We'll come back to that.
We'll come back to that.
Keep going.
Les Mis.
Well, I saw the Broadway, so now it makes me a snob.
Well, you know what? Well, yeah, you like to talk about your snobbishness, but here's the thing: I've talked to a couple people, my sister and a couple other people, that have seen the stage show,
right.
And they did not like the movie,
right.
Or it didn't. It was not as amazing to them because they heard how it should sound when people that can sing do it.
Yeah, well, that's good.
You know,
right.
I mean,
but
here,
you know, we always have to. I feel like we should separate, you know. Movies from books, movies from TV, remakes. So I would be able to separate the live, because live is always going to be amazing, right? Because
they shot, but that was one of the things with this. They were supposedly, I thought they shot all the stuff live or something. There was some element to it that they, I thought they did something with this that was really cool with the way they didn't overdub singing, is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
they shot it and sang it live, is what I thought.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But to your point, they're actors, they're not singers. Right, so there's going to be a drop off,
exactly.
And I think right now I'll just predict the punch in the face goes to Anne Hathaway.
Oh, I don't know. I'm a big Anne Hathaway fan after Dark Knight. Which brings us up to number five, which is Dark Knight Rises.
Nice.
And the funny thing is when he goes into why people liked it, first comment was Anne Hathaway, and I got to thinking about it. What did I like about that movie most? And I think my answer is Anne Hathaway.
Mm.
You don't agree with that?
I don't like Anne Hathaway.
Oh, I love
as an actress. I don't know what you brought to this movie. I mean, you know, you bring somebody else who's...
That's a tough role to play. I thought she... Well, we haven't done Dark Knight, so we could probably do that at some point.
We can talk about what she did real quick. I think you can probably bring in anybody to play the sexy Catwoman and be just as effective. I don't think she can act. I'll just say that right now. I don't think she... I think she's
there's something about her I like, and I can't...
I think she's a very nice person. She's got personality. I give her... 1,000% credit trying to do the Oscars with that dullard who zoned out the other year. I forgot what his name was.
I don't know who you're talking about.
But I don't think...
Oh, you're talking about actually announcing the Oscars.
Yeah. Because she tried really hard to be entertaining and witty, and I think she did a pretty good job
because
that's a tough gig.
Yeah.
But when it comes to her actual movies, I don't know. Again, that's my opinion. You don't have to agree.
Yeah, that's
but
fine.
I would like to see late Miserable. Oh, I'm sorry. We're talking about Dark Knight.
Dark Knight, yeah.
I think the overhype came because the second movie was so great.
It was tough to follow that one up. Heath Ledger. Right. And who carried that movie? Heath Ledger. I mean, he was great in that.
But the other thing is they're going to say this is the last movie that Christopher Nolan's going to do. So there was all this finality to it.
Yeah.
I think they leaked the ending, right?
Oh, I didn't even realize it.
Well, we're giving away spoilers anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. But
so,
yeah,
they leaked the ending. So I think the movie was set up sort of to fail. What's next?
Next on the list is Argo. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I mean, if this is truly Ben Affleck shot an Oscar, I'd like to see it.
He was nominated for director, right?
I think he was nominated with.
He's an actor in it.
He's an actor. I don't know what he's nominated for, but he did win with Good Will Hunting. So maybe it's the second shot of he's the like You want to go do, like, Laverne and Shirley? He's a Shirley to Laverne. Because Matt Damon's been a lot more commercially successful.
Well, I mean, the whole Bourne series, I think, was great.
The Tom Hanks and Bosom Buddy. Who's the other guy? I don't know.
I don't know. That
Ben Affleck.
The guy's looking for work.
I think he
did. But you know what? He came back because he had a couple of dog roles. Jersey Girl and...
Geely with...
Geely, yeah, right.
He needs to do a sequel. So I like to see it, too.
Yeah. The next one's Lincoln. But I don't know why.
You sure it wasn't Lincoln Vampire Hunter?
No, this is Lincoln.
Because I'm going to go watch that one.
Well, it's available in Redbox right now. I know that.
Well, nobody likes history lessons.
Yeah, I don't know. Daniel Day-Lewis is one of those guys I like. So, next on the list is Silver Linings Playbook.
To me, screams romantic comedy.
It looks like it from what I'm looking at here on the
screen. Jennifer Lawrence is in it.
Yeah. You know. I'm
let's be honest. They're Eagles fans. In this movie.
Are they? Well, that's a reason for me not to like it.
Exactly.
Without a doubt.
Cowboys fan and a Giant fan sitting here. Yeah. We don't want to watch Eagle propaganda.
Absolutely.
We have to go watch Invincible.
Oh, jeez. Is it Invincible?
I thought Invincible.
Invincible.
Invisible is what I wish it was.
All right. And number one on the list, can you believe it? Beast of the Southern Wild.
Because it was too preachy.
Well, all right, come on. We're not going to go rehash that, but this kind of ties into, did you think this was...
Oscar-worthy?
Yeah, did you think this was
Oscar-worthy? Also, let me just, I guess, talk about Oscar bait. That's a phrase people
This use. Has been listed as Oscar bait.
Right. And we can see why, right? The traditional Oscar bait is emotional, inspirational, overcome adversity. If it's a period piece, even better, right? Yeah. If it had somebody famous in it who got snubbed... This is their redemption movie. Luckily, nobody was in there that was in that category.
Right.
This is a little artsy. It's a little hippie-ish. I will say the one thing I don't like about the Oscars, just like any other list, like the Cigars Aficionado list last week, it's just a list. Right? These people do get awards. Good for them. You and I don't get squat.
Gives us something to talk about.
Right,
talk
just
about
gives
that
us
way.
Something to talk about. Yeah. But in general, the Academy is a bunch of older people who vote. So when you see like
we're starting to look like
we're
those
talking
people.
Like 60s though.
Okay, well we're right. Not quite there.
So
yet.
When you see like weird things happen in the past, it's because the majority of the Academy are older people. But there's always like one artsy. You want to call this artsy? That's fine. Or independent movie. There's always one of those entries. My biggest complaint with the Oscars is when they expanded to 10, and I think they sort of did a cop out because a lot of movies got excluded.
Right.
When they because there's you know. There's a whole new category for animation they had to do, and there's all these other reasons why they expanded to 10. To me, it sort of watered down the list. I don't think so. Again, I didn't see Silver Linings Playbook, but that probably traditionally would not. A romantic comedy traditionally would not have made the Oscars list.
No.
But there is like a running joke, though. You know, I don't know if you ever watched Extras on HBO with Ricky Gervais.
Ricky Gervais.
Yeah, I didn't see the whole thing, but he plays like an extra. Right. So in one episode, Kate Winslet. They're doing a movie with Kate Winslet. She's a nun in World War II Germany, and the Nazis are going to kill everybody in the nunnery or whatever it's called. And he plays an extra, so he sticks his big fat head in the camera just to. He's dressed as a Nazi. and everybody's like, this is the movie that Kate Winslet wins an Oscar. And in the very next scene, she's just the person, and she tells the most awful jokes, and she's totally inappropriate. Right? But that's her Oscar bait movie. You know, it's almost like Schindler's List, right? How could it not win? So the whole concept of Oscar and Oscar bait, you're always going to get something where you're just like, yeah, this is what they want.
Right.
Right. But I'm glad you said it. It's just something for you and I to talk about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, no, that's, so, should
good
it be
list.
In the, I have, it's,
well, it's nominated
it was,
for
it was
four.
One of the, it was one of the interesting, it was one of the interesting movies, without a doubt. I thought it was an interesting movie.
No, I'm glad I watched it.
Yeah, I am too. I'm very glad I watched it.
But it's nominated for four Oscars, Best Picture, Best Actress. She's the youngest at 6. The previous was 13.
Wow. I hope she wins it.
The Best Actor and the Best Adapted Screenplay.
I hope she wins it.
I
think she's got some tough competition, but I hope she wins it.
Traditionally, they don't give out Oscars to young people because they're like, we want to see a body of work, which isn't right because it's supposed to be for that movie. But I wouldn't root against her.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I wouldn't.
I don't know who else is in the category, but
right.
But.
Right. So I think that wraps up our week ahead and week behind.
Right.
So for next week, I think we have kind of an interesting idea.
Concept.
It came from a couple of movies I got this week. I think what we're going to do next week is We're going to have a...
Reboot Showdown.
Exactly. With Star Trek.
The reboot.
A reboot. And one we just saw recently, Total Recall.
The reboot.
The reboot.
So it's reboot against reboot. We probably will talk about the originals by default.
Yeah.
But it's not necessary that we talk about the originals.
I think we both going into this have a impression of one worked more than the other.
Right.
And we're going to talk about why one did and one didn't.
Right, like two movies entered, one movie leaves.
Exactly. It's so this is going to be...
the Thunderdome of reboots.
Exactly. So look forward to that, look forward to that next week. And you can like us on Facebook.
Right.
You can also find us...
hey, are we on iTunes?
We are on iTunes now.
Oh, nice.
So
you can subscribe to us on iTunes.
You can subscribe to us on iTunes and get us each week. So, and we also have Twitters, which I don't know if we've posted them on our site, but we'll put them out there somewhere where you can...
And always leave us a message on Facebook.
Absolutely. And, we look forward to hearing from you, and, we'll talk to you again next week.